Hi, this is Kathleen McCoy, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska. And I hope you like this new music as much as I do. We have new theme music, and I want to send a shout out to Kevin Bennett in Eagle River, who wrote this for us. It's called Lead Dog, and that seems like a very appropriate soundtrack for a local program like Hometown Alaska. Now, today our topic is romance because Valentine's Day is coming up, and we have invited people to tell us about following their heart to Alaska. And we put out some feelers on Facebook and, you know, personal networks, and we got a few folks that we know are going to share their stories with us today. But we really want folks out there to, if you've got a story of following your love to Alaska, we'd love you to call us and tell us about it. This is really a show for sharing your story. And you can, if you're in Anchorage, you can call us at 550-8433. But if you're outside of Anchorage, we still want to hear from you. It's 1-888-353-5752. Or we'll take your email at hometownalaska@kska.org. We already have a couple stories coming in there. So, and one more thing. I often tell people to be sure to go to kska.org to see what other links and things we've got. Well, because these are all local stories, I don't have a lot of links there this program. But we do have some photographs there, some really sweet photographs of some of the people who are telling stories today. And I would invite folks, if you've got a great picture of yourself as a sort of falling in love kind of person on your way up to Alaska with your true love, we'd love to see that photo. And you can email it to us at hometownalaska@kska.org, and we'll post it with these others that we have. So, and we'll keep it up there maybe till Valentine's Day. So maybe it'd be a nice way for you to send out a little Valentine to your true love. So anyway, I do want you to know that we're live right now, and you can call in and email in. And by the way, I want you to know that Ivan Moore is in the studio with me.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hello, Ivan.
How are you?
He's got a wonderful story he's going to tell, and he's going to be first.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. But first, let me tell folks that they can hear this program again tonight at 7, but you can't call in. So now's your chance to call in and tell your story, and we hope that you do. So
do I. I hope that they do. Please join me. Make sure that I'm not the only one.
The only one to tell this deeply personal and heart-wrenching and lovely
sakes.
Story.
Yeah. You know, I came here kind of like aspiring to be some manly, rugged, Alaskan-type man.
You bought here, into the advertising.
And here I am telling this story. How does this work?
Well, I was thinking most people think of you as a pollster,
mm-hmm.
and a political animal, and you're usually thumbs up or thumbs down on the latest election, but that's not what this is about.
This is
a bit more personal and intimate.
A little bit different, but that's fine.
Are you good about telling personal stories?
I'm quite comfortable because I've come to the conclusion that real men acknowledge and recognize their romantic side.
Oh, all right, ladies. So you've heard it here first from Ivan Moore. On Hometown Alaska.
I'm gonna cop so much grief for this.
Well, that's okay. You know, they got to see your softer side, Ivan, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right?
I'm ruining my reputation.
Oh, no. You're just tempering it. So they need to see the human side. So let's start. I mean, I saw your story because you sent us a little quick draft, and it's mm-hmm. quite involved. It's intercontinental.
Mm-hmm.
It involves, I'm just going to let you start to tell it.
Well, you know, I'm an English guy.
Yes,
right?
I can tell.
It's actually funny. When I first got here in 1988, people actually thought I was Australian. People still, to this day,
it was that
say,
right there. Day.
Are you Australian? Yeah, right. Well, it's. I don't talk like a member of the royal family. That's a completely different English accent.
Oh, yes.
It's just very much
snobbier.
More stiff upper lip.
Yeah.
Right. And I kind of have a different English accent. I mean, there are different English accents,
right.
just like there are different American accents,
right.
you know. I got here in 88 and really very quickly started hearing that question. Are you from Australia? Which was odd because I'd just come from Australia.
Maybe it washed over you and you picked it up.
That's what I thought. Kind of like, did it rub off that quick? I was only there for 6 months, you know, kind of like, but no, it's just that people confuse the accents, that it's actually difficult with an American ear. And it's funny, I've mistaken English and Australian people. Because I've been here so long, and I'm kind of my ear is functionally.
It's a big soup in your head now.
Yes,
yeah.
I'm functionally American. And no, my story was I was in England and was in college and got out the other end and took my last exams and got my degree. It was a thoroughly middle class degree, as
they
call
it. Was it in political science?
No, it was in mathematics, which is a very, very odd thing to have taken. I had a very, very narrow escape in thinking about becoming an accountant, which, thank goodness, I
can't see you as an accountant.
No. Actually, it was funny. I went to see this search company who weren't like accountants themselves, but what they did was they went out and basically headhunted talented and very boring people to be accountants.
I feel bad for all the accountants out there because we don't think you're boring.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. I've got to be politically correct, haven't I? Yes. And then they'd send them out to the accounting firms who would get them. And I went in to see these people and said, yes, I want to become an accountant. And the gal took one look at me and she says, she asked me a couple of questions first. She said, you don't want to be an accountant.
And I said, tell.
Yeah. And she said, you don't want to do this. And I said,
what gave you away? Do you have any idea?
I guess they're looking for a particular kind of mindset or whatever, but they didn't find it with me. And so I knocked about for a bit, and I didn't really know what I was going to do. Like a lot of people who get out of college, saying before as we were warming up that your daughter's in much the same situation.
To figure out what's next.
She's 23, yeah. She's out of college, and she doesn't
have a
clear idea. Yeah. And, you know, for all the young people out there, you're not supposed to have a clear idea of what you want to do. The key is do something, put yourself somewhere where you expose yourself to interesting, cool things that are going on and just walk through life and
walk
have a good time.
Walk down that road a little
bit.
Yeah, get a little more experience, exposure. Yeah.
Getting all knotted up because you haven't figured out what you want to do is ridiculous. And so anyway, what I did was I messed about for a little while until I realized I needed to do something. And then decided I was going to go traveling, which is one of the best things a young person can do during that time, because believe me, you'll never have the opportunity to do it in the same kind of way again once you get older and get a job and get a wife/husband, get kids, get job, get mortgage, get all the other stuff you encumber yourself with during your lifetime. You know, I packed everything I owned in a backpack and I went traveling. And I went to Australia.
As far as I could go,
long plane ride.
Yeah.
I was fortunate because, of course, England and Australia are both members of this quaint thing we call the Commonwealth. Canada's in – it's a little private club that we have going.
For people who talk like you.
They all put – well, sort of, yeah. They all put the Queen on their stamps. Mm-hmm. And because we were Commonwealth, I could get a temporary Australia work permit, and Australians could get a temporary England work permit. So it's kind of like a little exchange program going on there where you could work for a year with a temp job. So I went through the process to get the work permit for Australia, got that in my pocket, had a little bit of cash. I mean, we're talking like $1,000 in my pocket.
Yeah.
And you're going over the other side of the world, you're 24 years old or whatever I was, 23 years old. It's a gulp
big.
Kind of, yeah.
It
takes some, you're changing your life right there. You're going off.
You're getting
to
out
discover.
Of your comfort zone.
Yes,
you're
you
getting
are.
Way out of your comfort zone.
And so you take yourself immediately out of this situation. Oh, I don't know what to do. Oh, I got to get a job. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? Rut that you're in. And you suddenly put yourself on the other side of the world in a completely different place with $1,000 in your pocket. And that changes your perspective in a hurry.
Oh, yeah. You're humble.
Yes.
And you're willing to meet people.
You need to meet people.
Right.
Quickly.
Right. So now tell us about, where did you land? I think you said something about a hostel in the red light district, something like that.
Mm. It was a wonderful place, actually. I mean, kind of you think of red light districts and you think seedy. It really wasn't. I don't recall it being that way. The interesting thing about it was I arrived at the airport in Sydney off the plane. And, of course, that was crunch time. It was like, where do I go? I mean, I'd done shockingly little research about where to go. I was really quite unprepared. And bumped into another guy in the arrival lounge who was standing there with his backpack looking equally lost. And I went up and struck up a conversation with him, and he was looking for somewhere to go to. And I said, well, you want to share a cab? Great, he said. So cab pulls up. And we said to the cab driver, take us to where the backpackers go. Take us to a hostel. We didn't have a hostel in mind. And I've always looked back at that cab ride as being a situation in my life where I literally put my entire future into the hands of someone else and said, make a decision for me. Wherever you take me will define my life. And it did, because he could have taken me to a different hostel. And if he'd taken us to a different hostel, our lives would be completely different. My kids wouldn't exist. I wouldn't be here talking to you. Nothing would be the same.
Yeah.
I would have a completely different parallel experience somewhere else.
That's amazing. But somebody was watching out for you, I think.
Well, you know, I would hesitate to think that the other life would have been any worse, or anybody could have been hit by a bus kind of.
Yes.
The next afternoon, if you'd take me. So,
by the way, I just want to tell people, if you think you're listening to Ivan Moore, you are listening to Ivan Moore. He's on our show today, and he's going to tell a love story. So, you know, and I also want folks to know that we want to hear their love stories, too. So here's the number, 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752, or send us an email at hometownalaska@ksk.org. But now we're back to Ivan and his love story. So
yes,
we're at the hostel.
Please call in. I can't do this for an hour. So no, we're not at the hostel. Well, the cab driver drops us off, and it's on a street called Victoria Street in King's Cross in Sydney, which, as you say, is the red light district. All sorts of unholy things going on a block away.
Unseemly.
On the main drag going through King's Cross. But Victoria Street, like I said, a block off. Lovely little suburban, leafy, tree-y street.
Budget-conscious, but
kind of near
nice.
Downtown Sydney.
Yeah.
With literally kind of, like I said, the cab driver could have taken any one of 10 hostels.
Anywhere.
In the area. But he takes us to this place called the International Hostel. I check in there. I get myself a room. I got put in room D, which was, I mean, this is kind of like nothing more than a big kind of Victorian-style house, a kind of a terraced house.
Turned into a
kind
hostel.
Kind of big three-story, turned into a hostel, had maybe four or five big rooms in it, into which they crammed as many people as they possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
And there were eight people in my room.
Eight people?
In four bunks, yeah. Okay. But I mean, you know.
Okay.
The prime kind of motivation in those days was to spend as little as possible on your accommodations.
And to meet people, which you can meet people.
And you meet people
roommates.
In a hurry, exactly. Yeah, when you're sharing a room with people. And of course, there's all sorts of stories, but we won't go there. To cut a long story short, I was at the hostel probably for a better part of 3 weeks, maybe even a month. And it was after I'd been there 10 days, 2 weeks. That's when my wife walked in. Now, of course, she wasn't my wife then.
But it felt like something
and,
special.
And, you know, there's a whole side story to that, because I'd gotten to know this other girl that I was friends with, and she told me about Shelley, my to-be wife. They'd met in Singapore. I, of course, had flown straight to Sydney from England, and I was just going to do Australia, and then maybe if I can, like, you know, I had the work permit for a year, like I said, and if I managed to save up some money, I might go and travel somewhere else. The thing is, you see, when you're in a situation like that, you've got your backpack, you're completely free, and you're waiting for someone to say to you, hey, let's buy a VW Combi and drive to Perth,
you know. <right. laughs>
And you say, sounds like a good idea to me. And you quit your job and you go buy a Combi for $500 and you all load into it. And sooner or later, you're driving across the Nullarbor Plain.
Yep.
And you're waiting for that opportunity. And the cool thing about it is you can say yes.
Yes.
You have ultimate freedom.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
In those days.
Yep.
And so Shelley had met this other gal in Singapore. Shelley had been to China. She'd been away for 9 months by the time we met. And she had been down through China and Thailand and down into Singapore and then to Darwin up in the north of Australia and down the west coast to Perth. And then she'd flown across to Sydney. So we were expecting her. And then that day, I'm in room D, and she walks straight in.
Wow. Well, I'm going to hold it right there, because I'm kind of at the edge of my seat, and I have a caller, and I'm going to let her tell her story. Mm. Hello, Erica. You're on Hometown Alaska.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm driving, actually, but I thought I would love to tell the story of how I met my husband. Should I begin?
Yeah, well, Ivan, is it okay if she begins?
Sure, absolutely.
We're going to come back to Ivan's story in just a minute. But so tell us about yours, Erica.
Okay, sure. And let me know if I'm talking too much, but I'll try and be
Hey, are you okay driving and talking?
Yes.
Okay. Be careful.
Yeah. Actually, I will. I'll pull over in a second when I turn on Old Stewart. So when people ask me how I'm my husband, I say at a funeral, which is pretty true, but not entirely true. I actually met my husband for the very first time the summer after I graduated from high school, and he had graduated from college. We have these family friends of ours invite us to this cottage that they rented on a lake on Cape Cod, and it was his uncle. And so neither of us had ever been there before, but we both ended up the same day at this cottage with our family and friends. And that night, Seth, my husband, was going to leave, but he was going to come just for the day, and I was there for a few days. But it got fogged in, and so he couldn't fly out. He had flown in with his grandfather. He's a pilot. His grandfather was a pilot. They got fogged in, so their small plane couldn't leave, and he spent the night. And we went on a canoe ride on the lake that night, and there we were, you know, two people that had just met. And I can remember actually looking at him thinking, gosh, he's kind of cute, but what kind of a guy chooses to live in Florida? He's been going to school in Florida in Embry-Riddle, and I really liked mountains. But anyway, maybe there was some chemistry that moment, but at that, I had just graduated from high school. He had graduated from college. The gulf between us was enormous. And next morning, before I even woke up, he and his grandfather flew away, and I did not see him for 12 more years.
Oh, wow.
12 years? Oh, my gosh.
12 years went by. And we met again at his uncle's funeral, his uncle Kevin. And it was a bit by chance that I even ended up at that funeral because I had been away doing my research. I'm a historian, and I was doing my research in the Russian archives. And I had an unfortunate bridge jumping accident where I hurt my knee badly, and I was medevaced out of the country to have surgery. And it was 1 week after my surgery that Kevin passed away. And now, such a good friend of the family, being home, of course I would go to the funeral. But had I been in Russia, I wouldn't have flown home specially for the funeral. And so we crossed paths again at Kevin's funeral. And so my husband now says, I hope you don't take this the wrong way, honey, but I'm glad you hurt your knee. And he's actually home right now watching our four-month-old son, Kevin.
Now, Erica, who was the one who lived in Alaska first?
He lived in Alaska.
Okay.
So that's how I got here. And so it's kind of funny. When I met the first time, he lived in Florida. And not that living in a flat place is a total deal breaker, but yeah, he belongs in Alaska.
So I take it then that in that 12-year gap, he moved up here to do flying. Was he doing at Embry-Riddle?
Yes. Yep. It turns out if you're the private venue to get into flying is Embry-Riddle. It's not the military, and that's what he did. I didn't really understand that at the time, and now he's a pilot up here in Anchorage.
Cool.
I left out a lot of details because I didn't want to talk too long.
Well, when you started going on about lakes and being fogged in and canoe rides, I was about to warn you that there are kids listening to this show.
No.
Just try to warn you off. Wait, too much detail.
Really clean round one.
Right.
Well, that's great. Erica, that's a great story, and happy Valentine's Day, and thanks for calling in.
Oh, thank you for having the show. I'm enjoying listening.
Well, we hope we get some more folks like you to call in. So thanks a lot, Erica. So, Ivan, we're back.
Mm.
Now, where were we? We had just met Shelley?
Yes, she walked in.
And?
Well, you know, it was an interesting thing. The wife would probably. That's a very English thing.
The
wife. Yeah. You know, I'm sorry.
Blame it on your heritage.
That's an affectionate thing. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's an English thing. She would say love at first sight. She would kill me if I didn't as well. But I looked at her and there was an immediate and instantaneous recognition.
Mm.
It was like, I'm a mathematician, for goodness sakes. It's like, well, I'm not a math. I'm that way inclined.
You understand numbers.
Primarily, yes. and so all the kind of ridiculousness about past lives and New Age mumbo-jumbo.
And deja vu.
It is, well, deja vu is just kind of certain things seem to be familiar because certain things are similar, and that's just coincidence, I think. But this was something weird, and it's something that even then I really noticed immediately.
Was it like a shock to your heart?
It was just, I looked at her and I'd seen her before. Her face was just very familiar and comfortable to me.
Mm.
And, you know, interpret that in whatever way you choose to. But it was significant to me at the time. And the long and the short of it is she moved into the hostel and we were there perhaps another 10 days or a couple of weeks, and then decided, me and her and three or four other friends, to move out into an apartment.
The beginning of affiliation.
Yeah, well, we kind of moved out, and the hostel is a kind of temporary thing. You really do, after a while, get fed up with sharing a room with seven other people. And we found an apartment, and we all got jobs, and we lived this really wonderful, fabulous time for 6 months.
I'm going to stop you again.
Absolutely.
Because we have more callers coming in, and we may end up stringing your story out the entire
hour. And that's fine. And that's fine.
But, I mean, I like the way you bring us up to just a little point, and then I can introduce another caller. But so, folks, we're listening to Ivan Moore here in the studio, but we have a call. Hildy, hello. You're on Hometown Alaska.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I think I have a great story. I met my husband in Dawson City at the Governor Campground, and I was vacationing from Germany, and while he was pitching his tent the next day, or actually he was trying to pitch his tent on the next tent spot, you know, he was a typical Alaskan coming from the slope and heading out just on an R&R, and he got stuck on the border. I don't know if you know the border up on the top of the World Highway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you don't make it in time, there's just one bar. So he spent the night there with a few Swedish people. And so when he pulled in to Dawson, it was raining anyway. And so he was trying to pitch his tent. And don't ask me why. It just walked over and said if I could help him. And so we started talking. And then he decided he's going to take me up all the way, the famous Dempster Highway. That was my dream thing to do. But I didn't have a vehicle, so he drove me up to Inuvik. And we had great, you know, like almost drove off the road, tipped over, laughing our head off after we were standing on the road and got in Inuvik, somebody stole a cooler with all our food. And on the way back, somebody hit a truck past us, hit the rear window, knocked it out. So we drove about 100 miles on the dust road. Oh, my God. It was wonderful. The best trip I've ever done. You couldn't plan it in any way.
Oh, that's great.
So, and then he decided, hey, I got all the time. He told me later he wanted to go to Seattle. He never made it. And so he said, I'm going to show you Alaska. So we drove the top of the world all the way to Anchorage and then down to Portage and then back to Whitehorse. So, I mean, we made the most wonderful trip. And so I said, okay, now my showman wasn't that good. I said, you know, I wanted to have my revenge and invited him over to Germany.
To Germany, okay.
Yeah, or Switzerland. Actually, I was working in Switzerland then. And, we had a great time there. And then he just kept coming back. And then 3 years later, we got married. We decided that long-distance romance is not the best. So we got married, and I'm here now since 1987.
Wow. So were you sort of footloose and fancy-free like Ivan when you were doing all that traveling?
Not quite. I was between jobs. I quit my job in Germany and then took 3 months off. So I had 10 weeks. That was my time span, and I decided for once I'm doing something. That was my third trip to the Yukon. Mostly. I started out hiking the Chilkoot and floating canoeing the Big Salmon River.
Another canoe, Ivan.
Oh, man, that, yeah, exactly. But he wasn't there. He wasn't in the picture.
Okay. Well, Hildy, that is a great story.
Oh, it's the most marvelous story, yeah.
And so it sounds like you were coming up here to the north a lot, and then once you guys got married, you just decided to settle in Alaska?
Oh, I tell you what, Mal, he was here anyway. And to me, I always said, and today I said, I don't know if you would have lived in Louisiana if I wanted to marry you. So it made it much easier, I have to say. I fell in love with the North Country, with the Yukon, and I mean, I met him on my third trip.
Uh-huh.
And it was just one of those. I guess it's like a fever. You catch it, you like it.
I like that. It's a fever. You can't.
So I've been back ever since and had so many friends and family members come and visit and drove all over the place. I think, I don't know how often I drove the top of the world highway. And I still have contact with my very first guide we had when I did hike the Chilkoot. And, you know, I mean, that's been so long time ago. That was 1981.
Wow.
You
know, Hildy, I think you have inspired some more callers to call in. So I'm going to say thank you. And thank you for sharing your story. And
I'd love to.
Yeah.
Listen to Ivan's, too. I just can't wait to hear the end of it.
All right. I like that. That's what we want to hear. All right. Thanks a lot, Hildy. You take care.
Welcome.
And we're going to turn right away to another caller. Brenda, you're on Hometown Alaska.
Well, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Happy to do it.
Hi, Brenda.
Hi, how are you, Ivan?
Good.
So go ahead and tell us what happened.
Okay, I'll try to give you the Reader's Digest version of the story because I'm at work right now.
Uh-oh. Okay, we're all ears. Go ahead.
Okay, so we met in the year 2000, way, way long time ago, in the chat room. Mm-hmm. And my girlfriend gave me her old laptop, and he had a laptop. He was going to OSU in Columbus, and he was in his junior year of his four-year law degree. So let me know if I start rattling on too long as well.
Okay. When people start telling their love stories, they have a tendency to do that, don't they?
They do. They get all googly-eyed. Oh, love, and all that.
Yep. So what happened? What's your husband's name?
His name is Paul.
Paul, okay.
So,
I call my wife the wife. You can call him the hubby or something like that.
The hubby, yeah.
Okay, that sounds terrific. So, we just started chatting off and on, and, you know, of course, he's not Paul. I'm not Brenda, of course. And so, he came up here for a visit that June, and he stayed for 3 weeks. And we knew there was something. We had a feeling there was something after that 3 weeks spending it together. I took him around Alaska to Homer, and he really loved it there. And he loved up at the cabin at my parents' house, up the cabin. And so then he came back here in December the same year for Christmas.
To see you.
Yes. He stayed almost a month. He had a really long Christmas break. Originally, though, he's not from Ohio. Originally, he's from England.
Ivan,
a fellow countryman. Good choice. That's all I can say.
The East Sussex area. So, so he was going to the University of Sussex there. And so he came once again to see me. And then he stayed for a while, for, you know, almost a month. And then by then we knew, aha, definitely something going on here. We were getting pretty serious. And so then in March of the next year, I went to see him in England, spent 2 weeks there. It was fantastic. So then we had to figure out, okay, so who's moving where?
The big decision, yeah.
Of course, he was just graduating from college, but me, I was working and I owned my own condo here. So it kind of made sense for us, for him to move here.
All right, yeah.
Plus he was getting tired of the weather in England, and he had been doing some research around the United States when he lived in Ohio, and he thought Alaska was a cool place. So little did he know, he met a girl online from Alaska.
Wow.
It's very easy to do, get fed up with the English weather, let me tell you.
Yeah, because you haven't told us why you settled here. We'll get to that. Mm-hmm. So, Brenda, thank you for calling and telling us your story. And I guess it's been a long, long romance for you guys?
Yes, we've been married 8 years. Actually, it was 8 years this past January, the 17th. And things are going well. We're both working well. And we are still so much in love. We're still on our honeymoon.
Ah, that's great. Good for that's you. Great. That's great.
The one good thing about it is we really appreciate each other a lot because we had to wait 2 years for the paperwork to go through. So we did not see each other for about 20 months or so during the whole
right?
process of wow. immigration.
Well, wow. you'll hear my little immigration story, too, if we have time there? Before this hour's
we'll
up.
We'll get there because it's a good part of your yarn. Well, Brenda, we're going to go to another caller. I want to say thanks for sharing your story. It was wonderful.
Oh, thank you very much for your valuable time. I'll let you guys get on to the next fun story.
This is fun. All right. Bye-bye, Brenda. And Karen, you're listening to you're on Hometown Alaska.
Hi. Hi. Yeah, I'm a Alaska girl with a shopping list. So my cousin, yeah, I had specifics that I wanted. I grew up on a homestead up here, so my honey had to be pretty tough, be able to run a chainsaw, start a fire, you know, this type of thing.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Oh, yeah. So I had graduated high school, and my cousin was entering her senior year, and I said, hey, let's go to McKinley Park on the train. We'll just get our backpacks and go. And she's a homestead girl, too. Okay, that's great. So we get up there on the train and over to the – it was before the youth hostel got burned and destroyed and all that. And we got over there and checked in and found out we're backcountry permits and stuff. We're sitting there making dinner on our little, you know, one burner stove with freeze dried whatever. So all these guys come hiking in and you know, you hear all the stories of the youth hostel like Ivan was talking about, which was, you know, pretty wonderful. We got talking, everybody left. Most everybody left dispersed around. There was, you know, there's stuff going on up at the park. So this one guy, turns out he's from Massachusetts, and so he's sitting there, and he was kind of tired, so he didn't want to go anywhere. And so he finished up cleaning up. We were sitting there yakking, and then find out he had just come off Mount McKinley, off one of the expeditions, and was at the park. And he admitted, he fessed up that he had done something really stupid. He'd been there a week and a half because he had left his driver's license and had not, you know, he didn't plan on driving. He was walking and flying, so I don't know why he left it, and he didn't either. But he had left his license. He was waiting at the park for his mother to mail it to him, which, of course, you know, takes a week at least. And so we met him at the youth hostel, and my cousin, he seemed to have eyes for my cousin, and I was my cousin Shelley. And so we went out the next day, and we were there like 3 or 4 days. And so we'd go hike out, and then, you know, we'd come back, and oh, I got a job at the park, he says. Oh, great, great. So we, you know, had a bit of time. Well, we took the train back to Anchorage. And, you know, all the while he'd been pretty much eyes on my cousin. And, oh, fuck.
No, that was just your imagination.
Yeah, or
well,
maybe.
It turned out to be.
Diversionary, yeah.
Yeah, I got back to Anchorage. You know, I thought, oh, that man, he is really, you know, he's got what's on my shopping list. He's handsome to boot, you know. And so I wrote him a letter up to the park and did a general delivery and said, you know, if you come down to Anchorage, you know, call, this is my parents' number. And, you know, it'd be nice to see you again. So I never heard from him. Well, my grandmother and her boyfriend, she's a rollicking Norwegian with a boyfriend, she decided they wanted to go to McKinley, but they said, why don't you come along and, you know where to go and how to do it up there, you know, camping and all that. Okay, great. So I thought, oh, you know what? Maybe I could see him again. That would be neat. So we get this trip up to McKinley a couple weeks later. It's like September by then. And, you know, I'd sent this letter, heard nothing, and they were all going up. My family was going up to Wonder Lake on the bus, but I get horribly car sick. So I, oh, no, I'm not going to go. I'm just going to go get a backcountry permit and go hike around a bit. And on my way over to get the permit, I ran into this man. His name is Rick. And I was like,
this is the same guy, right?
What?
The same guy, right?
Yeah, the one I'd written the letter to and didn't hear anything. I was just shocked. It's like, Rick? He says, what are you doing here? And I said, well, I'd written you a letter, and my grandmother had come up and invited me along, and I decided to come up, so I'm going hiking. And I, you know, I didn't bring anything up about the letter other than just telling him I'd written it. You know, it was kind of awkward.
I can imagine.
You know, you write a guy a letter, he doesn't answer, and then you run into him, like, ah.
That is awkward.
very awkward. So I just, you know, turned the bright red and proceeded off to the permit. He just kept pace with me. He says, letter? What letter? Mm. I said, I wrote you a letter. And you didn't answer. So that's that. And he looked at me and just beamed. He just went, wow. And I'm looking at him like, man, what kind of a nutcase is this, huh? Well, he had never, he had gotten his license, so he hadn't gotten back to the post office. To
Okay.
It's an odd thing, but I remember kind of like from the time we were in Sydney, of course, in those days, we used to receive letters post restant at the post office. Like, this was back in the time we wrote letters.
Real letters.
It's like, how weird, how quaint, how old-fashioned.
Yeah, there's a phone up there. You could call anybody. So,
right.
I mean, you know, now we have phones, but, you know, we wrote letters to find out things.
So Karen, tell us how it all ended up. How did you actually, did you ask him or did he ask you?
Well, I ended up going to college. I went to UAA for my first year, and I stayed here in Alaska. He went back to Massachusetts. You know, the license did show up. We all had a good laugh over that. And I ended up going back east I was asked by MIT to go there, but I was too afraid of Boston. So I went to a small school in central Massachusetts. So I got to see him off and on. But I always came home for the summer, and he would come up, and, you know, we hiked Chilkoot and went on all these crazy, fun Alaska hike vacations up here.
Yeah. So Karen, you know, I've got all these people calling. They want to tell their love stories. So maybe bring it. Give us something to think about, and then we'll move on.
Well, have a shopping list.
Okay. I think that's good. It worked for you.
Well, no, I would add to that, if you're a guy, beware a woman with a shopping list.
Ah, okay.
You know what? I ended up being tougher than him. We
Is that
ended
right?
up divorced, but I ended up being the tougher of the two.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Karen, thanks a lot for sharing your story. And actually, we're going to take a little break now. And we've got a bunch of people calling. And I know we have a woman that I met who is going to tell us a lovely story. Brenda told us how she waited 20 months to marry her husband. When we come back from our break, we're going to hear about somebody who didn't wait that long. I'm Kathleen McCoy. This is Hometown Alaska.
If you missed part of today's program, or if you'd like to listen again to Hometown Alaska on KSKA, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. A copy of Hometown Alaska will be available this afternoon on our website at kska.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Hi, this is Kathleen McCoy, and you're back listening to Hometown Alaska, and we are mid-story in Ivan Moore's love story. Meantime, we've been folding in our callers who are giving us their love stories, and we got to get to the end of Ivan's, but we have all these other stories. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to keep trying to introduce our callers and get back to Ivan to get updates on his story. And coming back right now, we have May Blackburn. Hi, May.
Hi there.
Now, May, I knew May was going to call because she has a very sweet story, and her picture is actually up on KSKA.org. She shared her wedding album with me, and I mentioned that Brenda told us how she had to wait 20 months to get together with her husband. May, why don't you tell us how long it took you to get together with your husband?
It took me 3 days.
Now, there's a story behind that.
Yes, there is. I knew his sister, and she came from Alaska. I knew her when I was a senior in high school, and she was teaching school at my hometown. And then I lost track of her because I went to Chicago and worked for New York Life, and I guess she went to Alaska. And she had written to my mother that she was coming home on vacation from Alaska, and so I happened to be home in North Dakota, so I wrote to her and I said, when you come home, come up to see me. I'd love to see you. She brought her brother, and her brother said, well, we're going out to dinner tonight. Why don't you go with us, and you and June can talk more? And I thought that was a good idea. And the next day he called me and he said, we're all going to the fair. Would you love to go? And I said, yes, I would. So we went to the fair and started talking about going to Alaska. I was asking him questions. I didn't know anything about Alaska. And he said, well, you should come up there. And I said, well, what would I do up there? And he said, well, you could find a job. I think somewhere along the line, I even asked him if they had electricity up here. So I said, what would I do? He said, I'll help you find a job. And I said, where would I live? And he said, oh, he said, I guess you could live with me. And I said, well, that'd be great. But I said, you know, neighbors talk, so I don't know about that. Well, he said, I guess I could marry you. And I said, well, I guess you're going to have to if I'm going to come up there. And he said, well, we need a blood test. I said, we sure do. So I said, why don't you come to my office tomorrow? And I said, come around 3 o'clock because that's when I go on my break. And be darned if here he didn't come the next day, he and his sister. And she said to me, oh, I'm so happy for you. And I said, what did I do? And he said, we're getting married, aren't we? And I said, yes, we are. And here all this time, I thought it was just a bunch of teasing going on.
Yeah.
We did get married. I took him home and introduced him to my folks. And told him I was leaving for Alaska.
And that was that, huh?
That was that. And we went and had a blood test taken, and Dr. McDonald called me in afterwards, and I thought, oh, dear, what was wrong with the blood? And he said, I don't think I want you to go up there. You don't know that man. And I said, well, I know it's the right thing to do. And he said, well, if you don't like it, he said, you let me know and I'll send you money to come home. But it worked out just great.
You never needed to take him up on that offer, huh,
never
May?
Never needed to take him up on that offer.
Well, May, that's a sweet story. And when I was talking to you, you said the only regret you had is that you wasted 3 days.
Yes.
Deciding.
That's right.
So, and you guys lived together happily for 15 years, right?
We were married for 15 years when he died. Aww. I have two beautiful children, and I've got 7 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren. Hmm. So we started something good.
That's a great story, May. Thanks a lot for calling in and sharing it with us. And listen, listeners, go to KSK.org and you can see the blushing bride herself. And you can see the car they drove away in that's got all these get married things all over it. It's very sweet. So thanks a lot, May.
You bet.
All right. Ivan, we're going to get back to your story, but first we're going to talk to Cassidy White.
Okay.
Hello, Cassidy.
Hi. Hi, Kathleen. Hi, Ivan.
Hey, how are you?
So,
good.
What's your story?
Well, actually, I didn't really follow. My love wasn't up here. We came up here together. And it all started in 2004. We started dating in high school. I know, I'm a youngster. We got married when I was 19, which was kind of, you know, unexpected. But to backtrack a little bit, we started dating in 2004 and continued dating until we got married, obviously. and he decided to join the Air Force. His life, and he was like, you know, I love you and I want to get married, but I don't want you to have to follow me around for the rest of your life. I want you to be able to do what you want to do and go for toward your dreams and your goals. And so I was like, okay, I understand that. I'm an independent woman. I get it. And then he went to boot camp, and I didn't talk to him for about 3.5 to 4 weeks. I talked to him one time on the phone, and we missed each other so much. It was unbearable. I realized that I could not be happy without him in my life. I knew that no matter where I went, as long as he was with me, we would be good. And so we talked about it over the phone, and he said, all right, let's do it. It's done. And so he called me up after, well, we went to watch him graduate and everything, and then after he graduated from boot camp, he went to tech school, and he said, called me up, and he said, we needed to be, like, married, like, yesterday. So we, you know, our parents were totally cool with it on both sides. They knew it was coming, and they were totally accepting of it, which was great. And then we moved up here in 2007.
Wow. Was the move to Alaska kind of a shock? Where were you coming from?
We were coming from Texas, sorry. So we're Texas high school sweethearts.
And
we moved up here from Texas, which is a big change, obviously. So it was definitely different. It's so beautiful up here, and I really think it helped us in a lot of ways. You know, everybody says the first years of marriage is really tough. For us, it was really easy. You know, we were away from family and everything, so we had to depend on each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we couldn't walk out the door if we got in an argument. We had to sit there and deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, Mommy and Daddy weren't around.
There you go.
Talk to them, you know.
There you go. That's great. Well, Cassidy, thank you so much for calling up and sharing your story.
Thank you so much, guys.
Take care. All right. Ivan, we got to get back to you. I mean, where were we? Where Shelley was in the, you had this deja vu, you know, feeling about her.
Yeah, recognition of her. And she walked in. And I think the last I was talking about, we'd all moved out into an apartment.
That's right.
With some friends and lived this fabulous kind of carefree bohemian life where we had jobs during the day and we went out at night and had people over and had adventures and a wonderful time. And of course, that was 88. That was Australia's bicentenary equivalent. They call it the bicentenary. You guys were the bicentennial in 1976.
Right.
But you can imagine, huge party.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. New Year's Eve
the
in Sydney in 1987. The 200th anniversary was 1988, so New Year's Eve was just a ludicrous time.
Yeah.
And we were there for that time. Of course, the salient conversation that happened in December. It got to within about a week of Christmas. And we're in the apartment, and Shelley and I are there, and we're on our own.
And still not officially in love.
You see, this was the weird thing, and that's the way it happens, that, you know, we met in... It must have been early October. So this would have been a little bit more than 2 months later of living in the hostel for a little bit and then
in
the shared apartment with friends and what have you. That we never started up, you know, there we each had our independent friendships.
Mm-hmm.
And we were friends, you know, roommates. And we were having a great time and what have you. But... we got to about a week of Christmas, and we were, like I said, alone in the apartment, and she said to me that she was going to be going home. Like I said, she'd been traveling for about 9 months when we met, and so by the time we got to Christmas, it was pretty much a year. She'd been to several countries all the way down on the kind of backpacker trail through Asia, from China on down through Thailand, Malaysia, Singapore. She'd been around Australia. And she wanted to get home for Christmas. Her parents had been in touch with her, and of course, home was Alaska. She'd been, her family came up here when she was 14. She'd lived here ever since, and she, just like me, had got through her college days and decided to go traveling and had this great trip and kind of met me at the end of it. And so she says, I'm headed back in like a few days kind of thing. And I kind of went, oh, and kind of went away and thought about this for a little bit, and then came back to her and said, so are you definitely going home?
Really?
Are you really going home? And she said, yep. And there was a pause. And then she said, why, do you want to come with me? And I paused. And then I said, okay. Because that was kind of the equivalent of the, hey, let's get a combi and drive across to Perth. You know, let's go and
adventure.
Have this adventure.
More adventure, yeah.
Shoot. I mean, I hadn't exactly anticipated that someone would ask me to come to Alaska. And I hardly anticipated that I'd say yes. But sometimes you're not in control of these things.
Yeah.
And so I said yes. And so then she had her ticket and she left the following week and I took her to the airport. And like I said, it was this kind of bizarre, quite unconsummated situation where I dropped her off at the airport and said, I'll see you in a couple of months. Because I didn't have any money. I didn't have money for the ticket.
You and had
I
to
need,
work for
I
the
needed
ticket.
To work and I needed to save up money. I wasn't ready to go. And anyway, I just got there and kind of, you know, but the focus then for me became on earning enough money to buy the ticket to get up to Alaska. And I said, I'll be there as soon as I can. And I ended up coming up on February 24th.
About two months later.
More than 2 months later, yeah.
You worked for the ticket, you got
And I worked for the ticket, and I bought my ticket, and I had $30 left over, and I got to the arrival lounge and presented myself to INS. I was scruffy and unshaven and had a backpack.
This is the immigration story.
Oh, yes. and had $30 in my pocket, and they were not impressed with me.
Yeah, you were suspect.
Mm.
Highly suspect.
I'd been cunning and actually got a ticket from Sydney up to Anchorage, a stop off in Anchorage, and I made the stop off for 5 days. I'm not sure if I'm kind of like opening myself up to problems here 22 years later, but I gave myself a 5-day stop and the ticket went on to London.
Now, when I heard that part, I wondered, is this for the benefit of saving face in case she doesn't fall for you? You've got another destination?
No, this was strictly
for immigration.
Purely immigration dodge.
Okay,
absolutely.
Okay.
You know, I mean, frankly speaking, between you and me at the bedpost, there was never any intention of taking that London leg. And as far as I was concerned, I actually did end up using it, but not until a year later. I managed to stretch it out. Yes.
Yeah. So how did you get into the U.S.? They're holding you at the door?
They held me and they gave me a good old grilling.
Uh-huh.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
They went through my bags. They read every letter in my file. They came up with all sorts of scurrilous conclusions about the kind of ne'er-do-well I was.
Did you have long hair? Did you have?
No, I didn't have long hair, but I was quite clearly someone who had no permanent place of abode.
A wanderer.
But I was, my key was I had the ticket. Look, I'm leaving in 5 days. Shelley is my host while I'm here. Yes, I've only got $30, but basically I'm going to be staying with her. And basically I'm checking in with her. She's a friend that I met. And I'm going.
It's all legit.
I'm going back in 5 days. And, they didn't believe me. But in the end, they got Shelley in from the arrival lounge where she was waiting for me to come in. And she came in and she managed to convince them that I was an honorable and upstanding person. And they let me in the end, on a 3-month visa, managed to get that extended to a 6-month visa, managed to get that extended to a 12-month visa.
And by then you were clear about your affections?
Yes. Suffice to say, that we came to the conclusion that, we wanted to be with each other. And, that following December, a little bit under a year later, we went back to England. A similar story to one of our callers who kind of like went back so she could meet my folks. And we did that. And while I was back home, I got some savings out of a bank account I had back there. And then we came back here in January of 1989. And when I presented myself to customs on that particular occasion, they said, no.
Again?
Well, I'd been in for 10 months already, and they said, so you've been here for 10 months, and you're coming back again. Why are you coming back again? And I rather flippantly said, well, Alaska's a big state.
And
No. INS people don't have a sense of humor,
no.
Particularly with stuff like that.
Yeah.
And suffice to say, it didn't take them very long this time before they said, we're going to allow you in on your own recognizance, which is this curious phrase. It's basically they take your passport.
Oh.
They take your passport and they say, we're going to let you in. Be back here at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning because you're going on the flight back home. So I was back in London 36 hours later.
Much
having
less patient this time.
With an official deportation on my record. Mm-hmm. But you'll be glad to know, in fabulous British romantic style, I found the time before I got on the flight out to propose to the wife. Yes, I proposed to my wife in the arrival lounge, in the kind of INS no zone at the airport, as I was being deported.
That's wild. That's great.
Let's get married, I said.
And she said?
And she said, yeah.
Just like that?
Just like that.
That's great. Well, I'm going to go to a caller because we have Nina calling into Hometown Alaska. We've told all these love stories. She wants to tell hers, and we're just down to the hour. So, Nina, tell us your story.
Yeah. It's Nina. I was a nurse at a Native hospital in the operating room. In 86, this young boy came in from the bush, had to have his appendix out, and he was scared and teary. And one of the OR nurses said, "Now, you're too old for that." And it just broke my heart. I went in the staff bathroom and just shed a few tears. This poor kid, away from his family, and I vowed to go out to the bush and see what it was really like. But within a few months, I got a temporary assignment up in Barrow. And Barrow wasn't being staffed with regular long-term people. There were lots of temporary duties, and a bunch of us got together, and we'd play Pictionary, and we would, you know, socialize. We started a gourmet cooking club, and once a month we would order these foods up from Anchorage, and we would have Iranian food and this and that. And this one man that was at all these events, his name is Dean, he wanted to make fortune cookies for one and tofu for another meal. And these are pretty exotic foods.
So how did you, we're running out of time. So tell us, how did you?
Long story short.
Yeah.
I was leaving on vacation, and he goes, "You know, I think I'm going to miss you." And I just started blubbering. And I went back out to the nursing ward and regrouped myself. And he came over, and he ended up coming to Anchorage when I returned. And a month or two later, was sent out to Bethel, and he proposed from Bethel over the phone, but the phone cut out. And he goes, "I want to ask you something." And it was silent. I said, "I think I missed something. Can you say it again?" And so we've been married for 22 years. We live.
Oh, same as me.
That must have been a good year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Oh, Nina, that's a great story.
Thank you for letting me share it.
And you probably never thought that you'd go to Barrow and meet your husband.
No, never.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. Thanks so much for calling.
Now, have you noticed, Kathleen, that we've had six wonderful stories from your listeners and all of them were women? Where were my fellow guys?
Where were they? I'd like to know. Well, I have to say that thank you, Ivan Moore, for being such a good storyteller. Thank you, Mae Blackburn, for calling in. Join us next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for another edition of Hometown Alaska with Tika Ballas as she talks to Dr. Tom Hunt about hospice and the end-of-life issues on Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. Kristen Spack engineered today's program. Thanks for listening. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music for Hometown Alaska is Lead Dog, composed and performed by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Views expressed on Hometown Alaska are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available on our website at kska.org, and CD copies can be purchased by calling 550 550- 8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.